If you're curious or confused, get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Basket cases. So just as soon as I'm about to actually side with the left on something and call out Trump for his quote-unquote offensive tweet about Mika Brzezinski and her bleeding face, I see that CNN and all of their apologists are now scrambling and screaming about a wrestling retweet by the president, and I think what a difference a few days makes, because now I'm right back at square one realizing how fucking stupid and retarded you people are. Oh yes, the autism is strong with this bunch. All right, so I've gathered together the intelligence here. And as far as I've been able to verify, this all started over a tweet, which is what the president has become most notorious for. And yeah, that is a little disturbing that the president's tweets are more newsworthy than anything else. But nevertheless, apparently, he retweeted something that someone had put together about a video of his brief spot on past WrestleMania, where he tackled Vince McMahon to the ground and duct taped him to a chair and shaved his head. And someone took the liberties of plastering CNN's logo onto the head of Vince McMahon. And sending this out to the internet at large as a meme. You with me so far? From there, CNN, the Cannibal News Network, the Commie News Network, the Criminal News Network, take your choice, as if they weren't embroiled in enough scandal in just the past 2 months alone with the Kathy Griffin thing and the undercover admission of Russian nothing burgers, thanks to Project Veritas and James O'Keefe over there. With all of that scandal, and I think I'm leaving something out, they doubled down and took it upon themselves to lord over this person who originally posted this thing that Trump retweeted, and actually suggested that they would release this person's information. They would effectively dox him, which I think is a crime in some states. I don't know. They would reveal him to the world, which could cost him many, many things, from possible job security if he had a job. His reputation, because social justice warriors are all about turning people's lives upside down if you hurt their feelings. Come to find out, it's a 15-year-old kid who apologizes, although at practically metaphorically at gunpoint by CNN. It's supposed to be a responsible news outlet. Now, for those that don't understand what has happened, a news outlet, CNN, has effectively blackmailed, and that is not hyperbole that everyone is using when they claim that it is hashtag CNN blackmail. It is exactly what it is. And there are federal statutes against that. Or at least coercion. They coerced an apology out of this individual whose Reddit name was Han Asshole Solo, a 15-year-old kid. Now, after he was admonished by this company that is larger than life, so much bigger than him, so much more powerful than him, so much lawyered up compared to him, I'm sure. Not to mention that they're protected by corporate personhood. Look that term up. So, with all of this against him, he apologizes. And then BuzzFeed jumps in and points out that there is a different aspect ratio with the video that Trump retweeted. Apparently, CNN almost doxed the wrong guy, this being this 15-year-old kid. Apparently, the user posted this on Facebook, and that is what Trump retweeted, I guess, because the WWE logo was either added in or removed. Now, and the aspect ratio is much different. It was compressed down to fit the Facebook video size correctly. The internet goes nuclear with this, and Alex Jones, Mike Cernovich, and others in that camp, which I firmly support, have now called for a meme war. Now, true, that's not the best use of time and resources in the battle, the uphill cultural war that we are currently embroiled in. It is still necessary because frivolity is an important key to fighting this war. Because what is all of this from memes and social media? At the end of the day, it's frivolity. It's frivolous. It's trifling. But it's still a part of our everyday lives. It's interwoven into the fabric of our everyday lives. And so, because necessity is just not at stake in the same way that it was 100 years ago, with previous battles, this is the new front line. Social media is the new front line of battle. It's sad but true. Now, I want to take you now to a video that's not getting a lot of play. It's by Rebel Media. Credit goes to Rebel Media. They confronted Chris Cuomo to ask him why he felt the need to blackmail and coerce a 15-year-old kid for an apology. Why they felt the need to bully this kid over a fucking meme. A stupid video with CNN's logo superimposed onto someone's head in an orchestrated, prearranged wrestling storyline. Think about how stupid and trifling you have to be to have a temper tantrum about that. And also to defend Kathy Griffin because she sacrificed Donald Trump in effigy through beheading. Think about how stupid, petty, evil, vain, and disgusting you have to be on the inside. Her cunt walls must be like curdled milk and decaying corpse. Anyway, this video clip is credited to Rebel Media and their ambush of, rightfully so, of reporter Chris Cuomo.
Mr. Cuomo, quick question for you. Why did you delete a tweet in which you were encouraging the extortion of a Reddit user who posted a meme about CNN?
There was no encouraging any extortion. I wasn't a teenager. And the reason I took the tweet down was because the decision had already been made. I thought it was more conditional about whether or not his name was going to be released, and it wasn't. His name was already, you know, going to be kept private because of his own actions and their concerns about his privacy. So it didn't make any sense, so I took it down. It's not the first time I deleted it.
Do you think that it's appropriate for CNN to be targeting private citizens over memes that CNN doesn't like?
I don't think that's what happened, and I think you should look at the other content that was on that site and think about who you're defending.
Don't you think it's free speech?
You heard what I said, right?
But you guys accused Trump of bullying.
All right, and from there, she's escorted off the sidewalk property by security from CNN headquarters, of course. Boy, you know, I think I spoke too soon about Brian Keene. The Real Horror Show is happening over at CNN daily. How many more scandals can they involve themselves in? How many more battles can they insert themselves into? How many battles, how many fronts can they fight on? Because they're losing every one of them. It's amazing. The audacity and the gall with which they are fighting something that they don't even understand they're on the wrong side of. And that's not to let Fox News off with a slap on the hand. They're just as culpable. They're the reason, or at least contributors to the success of Alex Jones, who is not the demon he has been made out to be. He is waving his sources on air at the camera like a madman. Every segment, he tells you where to look for the information that he provides. Most people just choose not to. But then again, you know, how many followers does he have on between Twitter and YouTube and Facebook now? He has launched an empire, you know. There's no question there. Alternative media is gaining steam, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon as long as we have people like Chris Cuomo and the guy who gave all this insider information to Project Veritas. We see them going around wearing clown shoes, admitting boldly to the foulest things, you know, like calling the concept of ethics in reporting adorable. Like, yeah, that's cute, kid, you know, that you're so innocent and naive. Wow, what gall, what unmitigated gall to think that ethics are something to be balked at because, hey, this is the real world and we don't have time to stand for anything bigger than ourselves in the real world. All right, I've given that crap news network all the time I'm going to this week. However, my guest for this episode, the subject may or may not come up. I'm going to be talking to YouTuber LA Werewolf Entertainment. That's the name he goes by on here. Real name, Frank Espinoza. Sorry I doxed you, Frank. But I want to play a clip for you before we get to that, just to give you an idea of the kind of subject matter that LA Werewolf... And I really hate calling him that because I know his name is Frank, and I feel like it would be better to abbreviate it as L.A. Wolf. But, you know, I'm going to respect creative license here and call him L.A. Werewolf. The kind of subject matter he tackles. So to set it up, this clip that I'm about to play as a segue into the interview with him, it refers to a few weeks ago when Bill Maher and Ice Cube were having their sit down on the HBO show, the name of which escapes me because I don't watch talk shows on television. I just don't. And Ice Cube basically said that the word nigger was inappropriate for comedy. Tell that to Richard Pryor and... Who knows who else? What? Lenny Bruce, maybe? I'd say Sam Kinison said it. Every color of the rainbow, someone has used the term in comedy, I'm sure. And it's their right, you know. But we shouldn't be so afraid of words, is basically what I think L.A. Wolf is trying to get across here. But... he basically called Bill Maher out as the cuck he was, because Ice Cube was saying, you know, that word was used against us, you know, during the days of slavery, and you know what? You can't have it back. And I see his point, but it there's not just his people at stake here. So I have to admire what L.A. Wolf did here, even if it shocked me. It even shocked me. And that's because I'm not used to hearing someone speak this freely in this hyper-politically correct environment that we are currently living through. And I think that that is much worse. You know, fascism through feelings. That is where we're at on the spectrum right now. And fuck that. So I'll wield the danger words on this show. And I'll have guests who also wield the danger words like swords. And here we go. Parry, motherfuckers.
Pretty much all you have to do is self-identify as black. And see, as I slowly color myself black, I can then start saying nigger. So right now I'll say nigga because I'm not fully black. So nigga kind of flies. But, you know, as I do it, hopefully I could say nigger. Never, ever, ever back down from people calling you a racist. Never do it, even when you're not trying to be racist. Right now I'm being sarcastic by using blackface, and Bill Maher should have had a spine, a backbone, and some balls to say he was not being racist. He was talking about himself, and he should have told Ice Cube to go fuck himself because he likes to promote killing other black people. So in context, we need context. That's what I'm trying to say here. That's why I am doing this. That's why I do blackface. I could say a nigger 1,000 times. Nigger, 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 nigger. But the word nigger means nothing unless you give it context. If I go up to a white person and say, hey, you Irish potato nigger, that is actually a term that has nothing to do with being black, but has everything to do with that guy being a potato nigger. There's nothing racist about it whatsoever. But if I call a black person a nigger, then sure, yeah, that's racist. Totally agree with you there. But Bill Maher, again, was talking about himself. And that's why I do this. That's why I push the envelope this hard. Because Bill Maher failed. He should have pushed really hard for free speech. And it makes me mad watching him cuck like a little bitch over the whole situation. It just makes me very angry. We need to restore free speech. The N-word means nothing.
And you get the idea. But here it is, my interview, my discussion, my coffee clutch with LA Werewolf Entertainment, a.k.a. Frank Espinoza. Check him out on YouTube. What you just heard was Frank Espinoza on his YouTube channel, LA Werewolf Entertainment. Frank, blackface looks good on you. What, or was it Kiwi boot polish? Is that what you said it was?
Yeah, it's a Kiwi boot polish. You can get it at Walmart for about like $3. And it kind of does burn your skin when you put it on because it's so thick it suffocates the pores. So it is a sacrifice you will have to make in order to make this work.
Now, the purpose for that is the purpose for that video clip was that basically Bill Maher let himself get bitched out by Ice Cube when he's saying we taking that word back now and you can't have it back.
Yeah. And it really bugs me because, like, Bill Maher made the joke. He should own it. He didn't say anything racist. He didn't call a black person a nigger. Bill Maher, you know, he was just making a cheap joke, very light situation. And, you know, for them to take it out of context really bugs me, especially for Bill Maher, who likes to frame himself as, like, the open-minded liberal. So for him to bend to that was just pathetic. I just bugged the shit out of me.
Yeah, I think that this is coming at a very poignant time in our history because I guess you've noticed how chaotic things really are. You offer up social commentary every day and every week about just how fucked up things are right now. And I think that was important when you said, I think you got a lot of people standing on their feet and saying, fuck yeah, man, when you said, don't ever back down from someone who's calling you a racist. And have you noticed how frequently though the terms racist and misogynist are thrown around now, and homophobe and Islamophobe, and it, to the point that the words don't really mean anything anymore?
Yeah, well, my thing is, like, if you say something, you should own it. You should apologize, though, too, if you realize you messed up. Like, let's say you did something and you really messed up and you actually have real remorse, then you should apologize. On the other hand, though, you should not apologize just for money. You shouldn't apologize to appease a narrative if you don't agree with it. If you truly do not agree with something, double down on it. If you truly believe on it, fight it back. And that's why I did the blackface and joke and being a trans black person, kind of like Rachel Dolezal. That was basically the gist and the joke of the whole thing, that I now became black. So now I'm going to say nigger as much as I want because I'm a trans race black person. And I agree with Ice Cube. Only black people could say nigger, but anybody could in a trans racial society.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, yeah, I think that you've spoken about this. I have a real problem with the way that they're trying to reassign the genders to the, I mean, we can agree that it's men and women, right? And occasionally hermaphrodite, right? I mean,
in terms of what, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, they're trying to repaint the whole gender gap. I mean,
yeah.
We can agree that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, and if they want to transition to a different gender, that's fine. But now we have this this thing that I think Blair White calls a trans trender, where they just suddenly wake up one day and they have the beard stubble and they just wear a dress and say, I'm a woman. But I mean, it doesn't work like that. Can we agree on that or no?
No, yeah. Okay. No, yeah, I agree with that completely. Riley Reed, I think the name is of the YouTuber, or Riley J. Dennis, I think
yeah,
the name
Riley
is.
Riley Dennis.
Sorry,
right.
Riley Reed's a porn star, so I'm just totally fucking up here. No, but Riley J. Dennis, that YouTuber who's a transsexual trying to get fame off of it and works with Feminist Frequency, that YouTuber is doing it for attention because Riley did not become a woman until college. Riley did not become a woman until he learned about transsexuality. It was never an inside feeling. It was never a revelation that came to his head like Blair White. There's a total key difference there between Blair White and Riley in terms of becoming a transgender. This guy just wants attention. He wants money. There's a cash cow for it right now because TLC has the tranny show. So, I mean, there's it's a trend, but it's going to die once pedophilia becomes cool. That's the next one. We're gonna probably face or multiple marriages because you can't discriminate against love. I mean,
this
is gonna happen.
Yeah. This is the problem I'm having is that we both remember that Salon article writer who came out and said that he was a pedophile, but he's not a monster. He's never acted on his urges, and there were actually people who had the gall to defend this, and he had the gall to defend himself. I mean, and then you've got that whore on YouTube, Jen, with the J-E-N-N, who says that children should be able to decide for themselves. What Twilight Zone have I walked into? When I mean, we have opened up all kinds of doors here that we need to close, right?
Yeah. Well, they're trying to claim that pedophilia is natural, or it's like a genetic disorder or something like that. It's something they can't control, like being gay. It's the same narrative, right? It's always the same narrative, but they just kind of twist it around to fit like the pedophiles. And there's no natural selection for pedophilia because children can't get pregnant.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense from a biological perspective that you're attracted to a child that you cannot impregnate. Why would you want to have sex with that? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no real reason for it, you know.
How can we fight this? How could it have ever gotten to the point where we had to speak out and fight against this with the liberal insanity? How could it have ever gotten to this point? Conservatives warned us about this in the 90s. I don't know if you're a 90s kid. Or,
no, I know.
I mean, conservatives warned us about this in the 90s, that this would happen, and it's not the fault of the homosexuals, but we have to realize at some point as a society, we cannot go any further with this, you know? There's such a thing as neo-tolerance, right? Where it's too much tolerance.
Yeah, I would agree with that for the most part. I mean, I think the problem is it's a little bit of muddled water, so it's kind of like, it just kind of trickles there, and then when it finally happens, you're shocked, kind of like the transsexual trend. it's all because gay marriage is legal, and, you know, the Supreme Court already ruled on it. So then that led, that gave birth to the tranny movement that we're currently in right now. And then once the tranny movement kind of dies out and you get the bathrooms everywhere and you get all that stuff, then the Overton window will then shift again to something such as pedophilia or bestiality or necrophilia or whatever the next struggle they want
to
pick.
Yeah, I mean, there's no end to, let's just do it in the road. If it feels good, do it. And I mean, at some point we have to draw the line. What I want to know, though, you mentioned the Overton window. Now, I know that's a Glenn Beck novel, but let's try to codify what that the Overton window is for people listening who might not know. It's basically the kind of communication, the kind of discussion that is relatable for a time and place, right?
Correct.
Help me explain it. I mean,
okay, I can help. I could chime in on that. Okay. Basically, the way I see the Overton window, or the basic way to explain it, is society's tolerance. So, like, in the early days, you know, maybe homosexuality wasn't tolerated, and you were in the closet. Then you had the gay revolutions coming out, and then finally, in current time frame, gay marriage is legal. But you couldn't really talk about gay marriage in the 60s, but you could in present day, or maybe 2012 when it finally came to rest. So the Overton window is the shift. And another good example of the Overton window also is Donald Trump himself. A lot of people are fed up with the way the system is, and a lot of people subconsciously did not want Hillary Clinton to win, and that's why Donald Trump won. But a lot of people could not read the tea leaves because it was taboo to say you support Trump. But deep down, if you actually analyze the Overton window pretty well, it's very subjective too. But at the same time, if you can actually feel America's pulse, you'll know that Trump was going to win.
Yeah, I mean, she had a lot of shit going against her. And I don't think there's any mistaking that we are winning this week in a big fucking way, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a huge win for Trump. Trump won big time. I mean, with the overturn of the travel ban and the CNN exposing, it's too much winning for a week for him.
He did say we would get tired of winning. Have you always been a conservative, or did were you like me, where you flirted with, you were a liberal at one time and suddenly you were red pilled, or you said, wait a minute, you guys are fucking crazy, I'm going over here? That was the case with me.
I see. Well, I'll give you a quick background real fast. I live in California, and it's really a communist state. I mean, California is pretty radical. And basically, the way I gauge it all was I grew up pretty liberal in California. And then I guess you could say I'm not really conservative. I'm more so libertarian. I mean, it depends on what you define as conservatism in today's time frame with Trump and Trump saying LGBTQ is okay in the Republican Party and all that stuff. I'm more so libertarian, but I don't mind getting called conservative all the time. If the conservative movement has shifted, I mean, it just depends on where the conservative movement is as well right now. So that's kind of a question as well that conservatives should ask themselves in terms of identity. If that makes sense. Sorry.
No, it makes perfect sense. Libertarian, you know, Gary Johnson, it almost felt like he just stopped giving a shit at the end.
He was rolling around on the
stage of that talk show. That was his last chance to make his position. And someone brought up marijuana causing heart attacks, and he pretends to keel over, acting like just a complete idiot. And he was already suffering from the backlash from not knowing where Aleppo was or something.
Aleppo, yeah.
Well, I mean, not that he had much of a chance, but he still blew whatever minuscule chance he did have by acting like a moron there right at the end. And I wanted to vote for him, but when the day came, I had to go with Trump. You know, I guess you did too, right?
Yeah, pretty much. The best way I can explain the Libertarian Party is they cared more about the votes and like expanding their tent than actually being libertarian. And I think they could have got to 15% of the vote, and they could have actually led to Trump losing had they were more libertarian and not pandering to minorities and saying, oh yeah, libertarians are tolerant and Gary Johnson loves tolerance, and don't call illegal alien an illegal alien, call them a migrant or something like that. And it's just all that pandering really ruined the Libertarian Party and shifted a lot of libertarians to go to the right. And I think a lot of libertarians are still true to libertarianism. It's just the Libertarian Party is a joke, and it always will be a joke, and that's kind of the problem there. So Donald Trump is pretty alpha, and I think a lot of libertarians voted for Donald Trump for the chaos, meaning if Donald Trump can destroy the John McCains, then it is worth it for libertarians to vote for Donald Trump, because Donald Trump's going to take out all the neocons, and that's the goal. That's what I want to see, you know?
Yeah. You know, the whole thing with He Will Not Divide Us, this the Transformers kid, Shia LaBeouf, this whole thing that he did, this art project with He Will Not Divide Us, I just have to marvel at 4chan's ingenuity, because basically, what was it? It had been shut down in New York, right?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I'm going somewhere with this. And then it started up again in, I want to say, Arizona.
And I think it was Albuquerque, New Mexico, that's but I'm it. Not sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that got shut down due to fights and you know, all sorts of mischief. Then he happens to place a flag with a live stream going 24/7, and it turns out that it's right here in my state of Tennessee, in Greenville. And 4chan tracks the location of the flag based on the positioning of the stars, the contrails from airplanes, flight schedules, and the type, even the type of croaking from a frog. They identified the species of the frog that was croaking at night, and they tracked it down to this flag, and they removed it and put up a Kekistan flag in its place. Can you imagine if those guys actually, like, did something constructive in their time, what they could accomplish? The point is... the point is that we have a chance to win here. I mean, we've got them running scared. I mean, if this is really a culture war, we're winning, right?
Yeah, to elaborate on 4chan, I'll just do that one really fast. 4chan is basically the occult of culture, so to speak. They start and basically, like, you know, the whole Pepe and Keck and all that stuff, that started all on 4chan and then eventually leaked to Reddit, and then it eventually became mainstream. Yeah. So when you see people in the mainstream public saying praise Keck and they have Kekistani flags and all that stuff, that's 4chan culture, but 4chan kind of doesn't like it now because it's too mainstream for them. And they're kind of like, they turn into whiny hipsters once their culture becomes mainstream. But they do set a lot of narrative, and they do drive a lot of news cycles. A lot of people don't realize it, but they're a collective, and they're very smart. Basically, the reason why they're so smart is on 4chan, there's no identity. So because everyone's anonymous, the best ideas rise to the top. It's not about like, oh, yeah, well, I'm Mike Cernovich, so you can't question me. No, everyone's equally the same, so the best idea wins. And that is how 4chan is able to basically stop Antifa and Eric Clanton and find the Shia LaBeouf flag, because each person has a specific skill, and you put them all together, and those ideas rise to the top, and that's what happens.
Right. If there is a hierarchy of this so-called, I don't know, alt-right, I don't even know if you would place yourself in the alt-right, would you? What do you think?
It depends on how you define alt-right, because it's a very loose term. I don't believe in the liberal context that everyone's alt-right. Like, that's a load of crap. But basically, alt-right is a mixture of everyone who's pro-white. That's like the umbrella for alt-right. Like, you're just pro-white in general. Mm-hmm. But there's the racial purists who believe you have to be of Aryan descent, and if you're Italian, you're too dirty. You're not white. So you have those people. Then you have the National Socialists. Who are in the alt-right, kind of like Richard Spencer. He believes in, like, European white nationalism kind of thing, you know, like being like Germany or something like that before the migrants. And then you have the libertarian side of the alt-right, and they're pretty libertarian. It's just they feel like whites are under attack, and they have to be really pro-white. They really need that message. So it's a very – there's a lot of factions inside the alt-right, And would I identify as alt-right? I would say, I guess so. I mean, I say radical stuff. I would be pro-white. I'm not white Mexican, but I'll defend white people for the sake of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. If there's a hierarchy or like tiers of alt-righters, where would you place yourself? I know that you've been critical of Lauren Southern and the girl, and also the girl who got arrested at the Shakespeare play that suggests a Trump assassination recently, and she was kind of an attention grabber instead of actually trying to do something worthwhile. I would agree with you there. If anything, it strengthens your position that you're not unconditionally on the side of anyone who is conservative, right? It gives you a chance to call someone out who is on this side to prove that you're not biased.
To answer that, I would say I think the right should be critical of the right because that would make the right stronger. Whereas on the left, if you defend Hillary Clinton and you defend the DNC and you don't defend Bernie Sanders, you're guilty of that problem, right? I mean, the left is basically censoring everyone on the left who doesn't criticize Hillary Clinton. So on the right, you have to expose or talk about the Hillary Clintons on your side. It doesn't mean you hate conservatives or you're trying to be neutral. You want the best for your group. And that's kind of the way I see it. And in terms of Lauren Southern, I'm going to assume she's libertarian leaning mostly. I'm assuming that's her position on a lot of things. That's my assumption. I don't really want to speak for her per se, but that's kind of where I gauge it. But I call these people out because they need to be a lot stronger. And for Laura Loomer, she made a video about me on Twitter and she tried to debunk stuff that I said, but she doesn't want to debate me. So it's like, if you're going to talk shit for 20 minutes, then just come out and debate me, you know?
What about some other well-known figures in this, I don't know, scene or whatever, like Milo, Roger Stone, if you would count him, Mike Cernovich. What do you think about these characters?
I'll probably hang myself for this one, but I don't really care. The truth is if you saw the CNN leaks that came out recently from Project Veritas exposing Van Jones as someone says that the Russian conspiracy theory is a nothing burger, but Van Jones won't say that on CNN, it goes to show you he's playing a cartoon character or he's not really genuine. On camera, he'll tell you what you want to hear, but behind closed doors or off camera, he'll tell you the truth. And that's a little bit of the problem for the right. So with Mike Cernovich and all these guys, you know, I don't have a problem with Mike Cernovich selling a book, and I don't have a problem with him trying to sell products because I understand you have to survive as a content creator or whatever you want to call us. But for Mike Cernovich specifically, he's trying to separate the right, and I don't like that. I think the alt-right and the alt-light, alt-light would be like, you know, Lauren Southern or someone like that, not really white nationalist.
Gotcha.
You need them both together, okay? And Mike Cernovich is bugging me right now because he's trying to kick Richard Spencer and the alt-righters out, and he's falling for the media narrative that being alt-right is racist, and I don't like that. I think you need these people because 60% of America's white, and some of white nationalism does resonate with white America. It doesn't make you a racist to be pro-white. So in terms of Mike Cernovich specifically, he needs to stop bashing Richard Spencer and just let him on the side because Antifa and the communism, cultural Marxism, that's a bigger deal to me. And the Trump coalition has the alt-right in it, whether or not people want to accept that or not.
Speaking of Richard Spencer, was he really elected to some position within the Navy, or was that debunked?
I don't have the facts on that one. I can't tell you right off my head. I have to research that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to think of that, if that's true. But let's see. So I know that there has been a concentrated effort to, quote, unite the right recently. So you think Cernovich is trying to drive a wedge between us then, huh?
It really bugs me, like I said before. And Cernovich, he's a good guy. I think he's a good guy, or I like to believe he's a good guy. And I believe he has good intentions. But he needs to accept the fact that, there probably are crazy-ass racists in the right. But it doesn't mean that's what the right is. You know, let the media brand you as a racist. Who cares? But Richard Spencer, for example, is not really a racist. I mean, Richard Spencer just says he's pro-white and he wants to bathe in white privilege If you can quote Richard Spencer saying, let's lynch all the blacks, race war now, then I'll say, sure, you're right, kick Richard Spencer out. But till then, being pro-white, like I said, is not an issue. And for Mike Cernovich, again, to try to act like his brand of conservatism has to win is just so childish. You know, I'm not a conservative. I'm more so libertarian. But as an outsider looking into this, it's like, stop trying to make this a pissing contest and using your celebrity status to overthrow other people. It's not a contest, you know, but I feel like the big people out there like Posa Beck and Mike Cernovich are making this a contest, and they feel threatened by Richard Spencer if Richard Spencer prevails over them. That they don't want that.
Huh. How long have you been doing this now? Has it been a year yet?
Yeah, I've been on YouTube for maybe, let's see, today's, what month is this, June?
Yeah.
So we're still at the end of June. I would say maybe a year and a month. I think I started last month, would be officially a year, but yeah.
Well, I think you're able to put your facts together a lot better than I can. I've never been good at debates with this kind of stuff, but that's why I prefer discussions. But you're pretty good at putting your facts together. What do you make of the implications of Pizzagate? We can both agree that the human trafficking, particularly child trafficking, is a huge problem, right? What do you make of Pizzagate?
Well, my theory on conspiracy theories, or whatever you want to call them, is they're always a conspiracy theory until you prove it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think conspiracy theories are a big deal if they're somewhat realistic, you know what I mean? So, like, a good example of a conspiracy theory that's realistic was Hillary Clinton and the DNC cheating Bernie Sanders. Before WikiLeaks, that was considered a conspiracy theory. If you ever dared challenge that and you thought it was kind of fishy, you were called crazy. But once it came out to be fact, it is a fact. And in terms of Pizzagate, specifically, there's a big range there of what could be true and what is kind of silly. Do I think pizza parlors specifically are the reason of are the bastion of pedophilia? No. Do I think someone specifically like John Podesta, who writes a bunch of weird emails talking about walnut sauce and ordering all kinds of pizzas and flavors, do I think he's a pedophile? Probably. Especially with the questionable artwork that he has, he's probably a pedophile. His brother is probably a pedophile. There could be a small pedophile network of people that know him and his affiliates, but I don't believe in the Illuminati grand scheme. Everyone in the government's a pedophile. That's too far. I don't believe that.
There's something going on in those emails, though, isn't there? I mean, something's... I mean, who talks like that, you know? And I know that he also made reference to making an example out of people like Seth Rich in one of those emails, too. And he made reference to someone disappearing on some Japanese island. I mean, you know, I looked through a good deal of them back in the day around election time. You know, a lot's happened since then. But and then there's have you heard that strange audio that was supposedly linked to Podesta?
Is that the one where you hear a kid crying and goes, you think you're hot shit, don't you?
That's the one. That's disturbing as hell. I mean, that kid's not acting. I'm just trying to understand. Do you think it's the genuine article? Do you think it's really Podesta there? What's he doing? I mean,
that one's hard to answer because it's not certain enough for me. I mean, I like more concrete stuff. You know, I'm down to believe it that it's real, but can I say it's real? Not really. I'm not really 100% on that one. It does sound like John Podesta. I think you do hear the term Skippy or name Skippy, which is an alias he goes by.
Right.
But at the same time, too, though, you have to do realize there's a lot of fake stuff out there that's fabricated. I'll just give you a quick example. Basically, because of Antifa's popularity in the right-wing circles, there's a lot of fake Antifa posters coming out that are not real. So it could be fake too. I mean, I'm not saying the kid's acting, that could be a real clip of a kid being raped or whatever. But they could dub over a voice or have a voice actor. I'm just speculating on possibilities.
Right, right.
I'm not saying this is true. But from the Antifa stuff that I've seen and the fake Antifa parody accounts and all that stuff, cause I cover Antifa pretty much a lot. And I always have to make sure that I don't report fake Antifa propaganda posters because I'll look like an idiot, you know? I'm 50-50 on it, you know?
Well, I know that he recently testified in a closed testimony, right, to, Gowdy's panel or whatever?
Yeah, I haven't read the details on it, but I've heard about it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have really gone through the ringer the last few weeks with Loretta Lynch coming under fire, James Comey getting fired and being caught in some of his own lies. I mean, they're really, really butthurt right now with all that's going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, the problem for them is just they should have stopped. You know, at some point you have to know when to stop and call your losses and just call it quits. And James Comey messed up way too much. He should have not have doubled down on a lie that he knew was a lie. He knew he messed up. Laura Lynch knew she messed up. Hillary Clinton should not attack Donald Trump right now, because if she keeps that up, she probably will get indicted by the FBI, because Donald Trump is a very spiteful person. Whether you want to say that's a good thing or a bad thing, Trump will get you. He's very smart. He knows, like, a lot of people say he's dumb and says dumb things, or he uses basic words like bigly. It doesn't matter about that. It's not about how he looks. It's about what he does. And that's the thing with Trump that people don't realize. And I believe deep down that's an act. I think Trump is a good actor. I think he's trolling when he acts stupid and says basic words. I think he's way smarter than what people give him credit for, because he knows how to play the game.
Well, some people have alleged that he's playing four-dimensional chess, where he's five steps ahead of his opponent. You know, you've heard that, right?
Yeah, I've heard that, and I've also heard he has a time machine, which is a pretty good joke as well. You know, I
know what you're talking about. The 4chan conspiracy theory. I think they're just fucking around, but. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. Well, he sure spends a lot of time on Twitter. That's not very becoming of a president. But if that's the worst thing that I can see, you know, with him, I think that he's done a lot of good so far in just 6 months. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree most for the most part of that. But the thing that people don't realize is, like, why can't the Twitter just be for him manipulating the news cycle? Let's say he wants to pass legislation that's really controversial. So maybe he'll make an ass out of himself on Twitter as a joke and to get the media to twist their nipples on that one while he's actually doing real work. So it could be a diversion tactic as well. I mean, Trump is a lot smarter, like I said, than people give him credit for. So when he makes fun of that MSNBC journalist saying she had plastic surgery or whatever, I think it's Lewandowski from MSNBC. When he does stuff like that, you know, there could be more to it than what people see. You know, you can't just face value Trump. It's not just face value. He always has something behind the scenes he's trying to do.
You know, I never considered that Twitter could just be a strategy that he's employing against the media. I never considered that. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, actually. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I'm a really cynical person, too. So, you know, I always think of all the angles. So I could be wrong, you know. But from covering Trump a lot, I am a deep believer that there's more to it than what you see. You know, what you see is just a face, is just, you know, it's just the face of it. But he has a lot of strategy, and when the strategy finally gets exposed and you see, like, the master hand move that he plays, you just got to sit back and go, wow, that's pretty good.
You have mentioned in recent videos that you're involved in some big project with a few other guys. And I think it's called, what is it called, Bomb Islam or something? What is that? Is that like a joke? Or, I mean, it's a joke, right? Or something to go viral? I mean.
there's a lot to that. Basically what I'm trying to do is start a coalition of people that have radical things to say. And basically I don't have to agree with you, but like, Bomb Islam is a good example. This guy, named Robert, and the BBC made a documentary about him, in the past, basically saying he's like a crazy, Muslim hater or whatever. He would go to mosques and rip up a Quran and burn it or whatever, and eat a hot dog or whatever. He, you know, just trolling or whatever.
Oh, in the mosque?
Like in front of the mosque or as close as he can get.
Oh, that's...
yeah. And basically, and this is in Arizona, so you can carry a gun. So he'll carry a gun and like just start trolling. And then the BBC journalists would freak out. But back to what I'm talking about, though, I need people like that should not have to worry about being censored on YouTube for hate speech. That's just ridiculous. You know, he's not breaking any laws. He's not hurting anybody. He might hurt someone's feelings, but it's just the whole goal of what I'm trying to do is just say, you know, for the sake of free speech, just let it occur. Let it happen. You know, you don't have to like that guy, but, you know, on these social media platforms like YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, they're basically countries, okay? They're bigger than the United States. And we live in a time frame where they're basically utilities. You know, they're not really corporations like people want to think because they have monopolies. You know, Facebook and Google control like over 80-90% of internet traffic. So really, it's a two-way monopoly, or if you want to call it an oligopoly. You don't have much choice like you think.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you think about what YouTube's doing? Where they're deplatforming people, demonetizing people? Has that happened to any of your videos yet?
I'm completely demonetized now. I've done it on purpose as a way to protest YouTube. I work 40 hours a week, so I don't really care. You know, the money was cool to get it. You know, I get like $300-$500 depending on, you know, how viral it stuff got or whatever. But with YouTube doing that specifically, they're going to screw themselves long run. And I'm trying to start a network with somebody. I can't talk about it too much, but basically, there's a networking process of being a free speech beacon that I'm trying to start with a friend of mine. And he's a cool guy that I met recently. And, these hate speech rules, people want to see it, you know, people pay for HBO because they're tired of watching regular TV. You know, people want to see something more raw, more real, without the FCC or YouTube terms of service. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. So what do you think the video was that finally did it, that sealed your fate?
Basically, I used to talk about Islam a lot, and I used to call it the Religion of Peace. That was the series that I had on YouTube. But I got a lot of threats of YouTube giving me strikes, and I got a lot of threats of people saying they're going to report my content and they're going to try to get me banned in certain countries. YouTube would send me emails saying that we cannot display your videos in this part of the world. Yeah, basically all the Eurozone and Saudi Arabia and maybe I think Turkey or something like that specifically. But yeah, it's just ridiculous. You know, I thought the internet was the internet.
Yeah, there's a lot more of a call to police it and regulate it and everything, and I mean that would suck all the joy out of it. I mean, we don't need an FCC for the internet, man. That would take all the joy out of the internet that separates it from radio and television. I mean, this is where you go to be unbridled and unfettered and just, you know, speak your mind.
Well, that's why your podcast, for example, is cool. You know, people could listen to it and they could listen to the content. If I want to yell nigger 1,000 times, then that's my choice. And, you know, it's reflective on you as a producer, whether or not you want to keep it in your show. It's your show. If you want to edit what I just said out, then that's your choice to do so. It's your choice to censor yourself or not censor yourself. Why do you need someone over your shoulder, or why do you have to look over your shoulder as a content creator? Because when I make videos on YouTube, I have to look over my shoulder and make sure Susan Wojcicki, the CEO, is not going to slam me for hate speech. Then I have to look over my other shoulder to make sure I don't get banned in certain countries. I mean, that is so ridiculous.
Now, I mean, does it really matter if you can't be seen in certain countries? Does that kind of mean that you can't YouTube anymore if you cannot be seen in certain countries? Or what's the blowback here? What's the disadvantage?
Well, to me, I want to red pill Europe because I don't want to see Europe turn into a Muslim hellhole. So that's like a big deal to me. And also, too, though, I do have some fans from Patreon that donate to me who are from those areas. I do have two Patreon donors from Germany specifically. And it bugs me that they can't see my content. I do put it on VidMe because VidMe is kind of more new, per se, and they can watch it there. I do put it on Minds.com as well for them. I do that specifically for them. They each give me $5 a month, so that's $10. So for $10 a month, I will make a page on Minds.com and upload my content there for you. That's basically what I do because it's a big deal to me. You know, I thought the internet was a place where you could upload whatever you want and anybody can see it. And I've learned a lot of stuff from other countries too, from seeing other cultures. And, you know, everyone's a journalist today with cell phones. You know, that's my belief system. And I want to see what other people across the world have to do, too. You know, it does help out because I have an American perspective, but maybe I don't know how someone in the UK sees something or someone that's a Muslim sees something. I mean, you never know the point of views you can get. That's why I don't want it censored.
Yeah, Sweden's got a real problem right now, and there are actually some places where that are Muslim only, and as much as liberals try to deny that, from what I understand, a guy went into one of these Muslim-only zones to prove that they exist, and he was forced out. Is that right?
Yeah, that was right. I believe his name is Tim Pool, I want to say.
That was Tim Pool? Okay. Yeah. He's covered a lot of rallies over here in the States, too. Do you see yourself on his level yet, or?
I would say I'm more of a journalist, and Tim Pool's more of a guerrilla filmmaker, or like guerrilla journalist who goes out to the field.
Yeah.
I would like to do what Tim Pool does. I would like to push the envelope. You know, if I get enough money from crowdsourcing and stuff to where I can quit my job, I would do that full time. I would travel and I would cover rallies and stuff like that probably. But you know, with Tim Pool, I actually like Tim Pool a lot, even though he's liberal. Like, a lot of people give him shit for that and go, oh, you're not red-pilled, you're just a liberal cuck. Oh. But it's like, you know, just because someone's a liberal, that doesn't make them a far-left SJW. And that's something that the right has to realize, you know. It's just the left is going far left and communistic to where people like Tim Pool, who are pretty moderate, you know, maybe he wants gay marriage, maybe he wants to legalize weed. But he's not going to join Antifa. He's not going to assault you. He's not going to do anything crazy like that. But, yeah, Tim Pool's a good journalist. I like his style. He's pretty raw for the most part. He tries his best. And people on the right that give him shit should stop because you need people like him.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say that you did start covering rallies like Tim Pool and Lauren Southern and Baked Alaska. And someone came at you with a bike lock or you know, the tail end of a commie flag or something and tried to attack you with it, would you be prepared to defend yourself, or are you a total peacemaker? I mean,
I would just go all out till I get knocked out. I don't care.
Really?
I would take as many of them out as I could until I got knocked out. Like, that would be like, I would just go in a total rage fit and I would just start striking women, Antifa dykes. I don't care. They would all get a strike. I'll take off their masks. I'll take anything I can get as a trophy. You know, because that communist behavior should not be tolerated at all. I don't care if you're conservative, I don't care if you're liberal, I don't care if you're libertarian, I don't care what you are. Everyone should assault Antifa because they need to go back to the depths of hell of where they came from. And these people, are just not American, period. You know, they're communist pieces of trash, and I don't want them to be around us. And if they're going to be violent, then they deserve it.
Exactly. Exactly. I actually, had a liberal, well, former friend actually tell me when we got into one of these Google Hangout arguments on his podcast, he actually told me that Antifa was a bit of a boogeyman. You know, they had replaced Muslims as the new boogeyman. Well, you know what? Tell that to the kid who got his head knocked in by a bike lock by Eric Clanton. Tell that to Lauren Southern, who has had piss thrown on her, what, three times now? I mean,
about
three times?
Yeah, I think it's two or three, yeah.
And I mean, you know, it was over there in Oregon where the STDs outnumber the people, I guess. Well, in some areas. Portland, I mean. Anyway, so I don't think that it's quite as simple as calling them the boogeyman. They're a major problem, and for people who claim to be so anti-fascist, they're engaging in awfully fascist behavior.
Yeah, I think the issue with Antifa, and there's something I can't really figure out since I've been covering them. Antifa has always been around. They've always been around. You know, if you think about Occupy Wall Street back in, I think, 2008, 2007 or whatever it was, they were there. You know, they were the ones breaking the buildings, attacking the banks, throwing over trash cans, doing all that stuff. Capitalism is evil. But in recent times, since Trump won, they've decided to take it upon themselves to assault people, which is a huge difference. You know, it's not property damage anymore. Now you're assaulting people. And it's a huge shift. And I know Antifa in Europe fights physically with the nationalists, whether it's Poland or whatever country you want to pick where Antifa could be. German nationalists fighting Antifa. I've seen the videos online. It's been happening for a while, but in America, it's a newer trend, so to speak, which has given Antifa a big spotlight, and the attention is drawn on themselves, so it's really their fault for this type of physical violence that they thought they could do to stop Milo and everybody. But the journalists who keep calling them anti-Trump protesters are part of the problem as well, so it's not just Antifa that's the issue. And Antifa is not really a boogeyman because now they're physically assaulting people. And, they're crazy. They literally believe you're a Nazi. So, I mean, their behavior is justified if you truly were a Nazi trying to exterminate people in America and you had all these crazy ideas. I guess it would be justified, but it's not justified because it's not real, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. They're brainwashed.
Definitely. Where do you see yourself taking this effort of yours with the YouTube channel and everything? I mean, do you see yourself branching off into, like, I don't know, documentaries, writing books, something like that?
Yeah, there's a couple of books I want to write. I want to write The Art of War 2, which is going to be dedicated on internet warfare and all that stuff and how to win.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I want to write a book on that one. There's a lot of strategies, and there's another book I want to write about stereotypes. I was going to call it Niggers, Kikes, Fags, and Dykes, and it's going to be based on stereotypes. And I was going to write about every stereotype that's true, because whether or not people want to admit it, like, you're a stereotype to some degree.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm a stereotype to some degree. I'm a whitewashed Mexican guy. I like certain things that other whitewashed Mexicans like, you know? And it's
whitewashed.
True. No, it's true. Well, it's true, you know. And a lot of people think they're unique, but you're not unique. You fit into a profile and a character demographic, and it's something I wanted to write about so people can get a better self-identity, and people need to stop realizing they're unique. You know, you're not really unique. And all these famous people like Mike Cernovich and all them, there's probably hundreds of other Mike Cernoviches out there. It's just he took the risk. And I think that's the biggest difference between us all, though, is, you know, Are you gonna take a risk on what you believe in, or are you just gonna be a coward? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Mike Cernovich is just really brave, and he says what he feels, and a lot of other people feel it, and that's why he's popular. But a lot of people could be just like him had they taken the risks he takes.
Right. Well, I mean, let's say that your Patreon just exploded one day, and you were able to start covering rallies and traveling around and everything. I mean, how far would you take this? How brave would you be?
I would take it to the extreme. I would call out people to their face. You know, I would go up to Mike Cernovich and ask him why he hates the alt-right. You know, I mean, I don't really care. At this point, you know, right or left of the spectrum, I give no fucks. I'm not brave. I just don't care. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care if Antifa assaults me. I don't care if people on the right hate me. I've lost 500 subs criticizing Laura Loomer, and I don't care. I'll do it again if I feel like it's correct. And, you know, at the end of the day, if there's something I can cover and it'll bring a spotlight to something, the truth always prevails. You know, that's the way I see it. The truth prevails, and if people could see something for what it is, they get to decide. And I believe people are smarter than we give them credit for sometimes. And I just want to expose the truth for what it is, whether it's right-wing problems or left-wing problems. And I would consider myself on the right. I lean right, you know, for the most part, and I'm libertarian. But yeah, if it exploded, I would expose whatever I could.
Wow. Who would you want to call out if you had that kind of power at your disposal and you know, you could influence public opinion on the level that I'm sure you would like to, who would you most like to call out?
I would call out Rebel Media for being cucks and defending Laura Loomer. I would call out Gavin McInnes on the video he did defending Laura Loomer, because I know from what I hear on the internet and people messaging me who kind of know him, they tell me he doesn't really like it, but he has to do it because it's his job. Meaning, like, well, you know, Laura Loomer is kind of tied to Rebel Media, so you have to kind of defend her. You know, I would, and it's not for, and again, it's not me trying to be like, oh yeah, I'm trying to destroy these outlets. I like Rebel Media. I like what they do. But this is one major mistake, you know? And, who else would I call out? I call out George Soros, I guess. I call out lefties. I would call out, anyone who defends Antifa, any journalist who calls Antifa anti-Trump protesters. I would call them out to their face and ask them why they're deliberately lying to the public and won't use the word Antifa. I would call out, I would call anybody I could. I'd call out Van Jones, anybody, you know, no, there's no one sacred, you know, there's no sacred cow here, you know? So, yeah, I mean, anyone on the left that I feel like is really full of shit, I'd call them out. But the thing for me though, is like, it's easy to tweet about it and to like live in your echo chamber. And that's another thing to go out and do it, you know? So once I have the means to do that, I'll do it, you know? I mailed Michael Moore tampons, baby shampoo.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. You also, like, weren't there baby wipes in there, too?
Yeah. Well, no, there's no baby wipes. There's, like, tampons, a huge cucumber.
Midol.
A lube. Okay. Baby shampoo that said no tears. tampons. It's because he's a huge pussy, you know? Yeah. And it's like, that needs to be done, you know? So that's why I did it.
Yeah. Michael Moore is, what's so funny?
I'm just laughing because it's like, again, like these big people out there, like Lauren Southern, they should be doing this. They should be trolling the shit out of these people, you know? It's like, come on, just do it. Who cares?
Yeah, it's almost become a pastime to see how you're going to just sarcastically just shove it up their ass. I mean,
yeah, well, the other thing I was going to start is, it's either going to be called the Infidel Challenge or it's going to be called the Islam Challenge.
Hmm.
And basically what you have to do is film yourself with your face. You have to say your name. You have to burn a Quran. You have to eat bacon. You have to draw Muhammad. You have to do all these things to prove that you're willing to say Islam sucks. And you have to read your favorite verse from the Quran. I prefer you pick a violent one, but you can pick whatever you want. And
are there any peaceful passages in there? I mean,
well, I don't know, but the point of the Quran challenge or the Islam challenge, whatever you want to call it, a lot of people on the right are saying fuck Islam, Islam sucks, but they won't burn a Quran showing their face, you know. And people on the left, people like Amazing Atheist on YouTube, who claims he thinks Islam is a problem, he says it, but it's like, I want to see you burn a Quran and ruin your character to a degree. To say Islam sucks. Like, I want to see people take that risk, you know?
Yeah, this is another problem that I struggle with, because I just left this community of authors because I'm not afraid to skewer my own character and burn my own reputation to the ground, because I was tired of walking on eggshells, and I wanted to prove that, you know, it doesn't mean anything ultimately, this code of professionalism, especially if you haven't really written any full-length books yet. But that's the thing, is that today's disgraces are tomorrow's high fives, because tomorrow it's going to be someone else that they're chomping at the bit to hunt down like a witch, and you can insult them and they'll say, hey, this guy's not so bad, you know, he's insulting this guy that we're witch hunting now. I mean, it's varying degrees of disgrace, and, you know, people memories are not that sharp, as not as much as we think. I mean, they don't care after the news cycle is done with it, basically, right?
No, you're pretty much correct. You know, it's like people on the right, I hate to harp on Laura Loomer, but people on the right are willing to throw away their free speech advocacy for shutting down a play. And it's like, come on, you know, you're supposed to be for free speech, and that's just the flavor of the month. And then when Antifa shuts down your event, you're going to be pro-free speech again, you know? And it's an issue. But I really want to talk about, though, really fast as well, you walking on eggshells as an author.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these groups, and I'm sure it was a lefty kind of leaning group.
Yeah.
a lot of these groups out there, again, they need to have someone step on their toes, because they need to realize that they live in an echo chamber. And I think that's the ultimate goal for me as well, is it's like, if you like diversity and you like all this stuff as a liberal or whatever, it's like you're going to have to accept diversity of opinion as well. And if you can't handle that, then you're just no different than the people you claim that you hate.
Exactly. I appreciate that. And my friend Kevin Strange will appreciate that too, I'm sure, because he's ran into some of the same problems where they hate it so much, this free thinking, that they actually want to go into our bedrooms and drudge up stories about us and rumors about us, you know, to publicly shame us, which is what social justice warriors do best, is try to shame people, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing that they don't realize. It's like, if I do blackface and I say nigger and I say all kinds of crazy stuff, you can't shame me. How are you going to shame a guy that does blackface and calls himself a fat neckbeard who lives in his mom's basement? What are you going to do? You have nothing. You have nothing on me. You can't stop me. You can't. What are you going to – I mean, what weapon are you going to have? Oh, wow, you said something racist. Yeah, the guy that does blackface casually. Okay.
Yeah, you can't. You definitely have shown that you are not afraid to embrace true, unconditional free speech. And, you know, sometimes, yeah, like you said, it's better to step on toes than eggshells. Frank, I appreciate you joining me, man. You want to talk about your Patreon or plug anything before we wrap this up?
Yeah, sure, I guess. Yeah, you can follow me at LA Werewolf OG on Twitter. You can follow me on YouTube at LA Werewolf Entertainment. My Patreon page is linked there. There's a lot of stuff that's linked there. So you can just follow the links. You'll figure it out. You can probably Google it and find either hate videos made about me, or you can find the real me. Just Google it and have some fun.
Yeah, I'll have them linked up below when this goes up, and I really appreciate your bravery and your candor, and hopefully I can have you back here soon when the next big controversy strikes. Maybe we could make this a regular thing where you kind of sound off on your own opinions, you know, where it doesn't interfere with your show, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. Maybe like a once-a-month thing or something like that. Sure, yeah. I wouldn't mind coming on here and there.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Frank, and best of luck with everything. We'll keep an eye out for this project that you said you couldn't talk about, but another social media network possibly or something?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I don't know. It's I don't want to say it's going to happen because I don't want it to flop and then look stupid. So yeah. I'm flirting with the idea and templates and stuff online and just figuring out the cost. You know, the cost is a big deal, and, you know, what I can and can't do, and the finances and how to raise money and all that stuff. So there's a lot coming into it, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, friend, thank you. Best of luck with everything.
All right. Thank you, Jeremy.
All right. There we go. Another one in the bag. And if you want to see more from Frank on YouTube, that's LA Werewolf as one word, and then Space Entertainment. His most recent video posted earlier today was indeed about the CNN blackmail that is blowing up across the internet and the nation. Before I go, I wanted to talk about a book that has left me spellbound recently called The Secret of Ventriloquism by John Padgett, and it's published by Dunham's Manor Press, which is an imprint of Jordan Crawl's Dynatox Ministries. But if you're not into the PayPal limited edition thing, don't fret, because you can actually find The Secret of Ventriloquism on Amazon as well for Kindle and paperback. Now, a lot of authors with Dunham's Manor Press focus on a Lovecraftian tone in their stories, and they often deal with mythos or story cycles, where they kind of invent their own dark mythology that is brooding and ready to explode again, you know, to rise from the dead under the surface, the underbelly of civilization. A lot of their authors specialize in the Lovecraftian fiction niche. And the mythos of this book, The Secret of Ventriloquism, revolves around this fictional book within the story, within the collection of stories. It's interwoven throughout all the stories, and it's called 20 Simple Steps to Ventriloquism, and it lays out the premise, the central premise of the collection of stories, that there is both lesser ventriloquism, which is the ones that we know here in real life, as I understand it, and then there's greater ventriloquism, where you learn to control people, and you can make them mutilate themselves, you can make them crash planes. It's a really fascinating work, and I don't even know if I'm going to bother trying to obtain an interview with John Padgett, because if he's anything like the rest of that community that I just left, the content of this show is probably going to turn him off, because I know that most authors veer comfortably into the left lane of the traffic of life, meaning they're very liberal. But yeah, if John Padgett, if word of this gets back to John Padgett and he'd like to come on and talk in more in depth about this brilliant collection of short stories, I'd love to explore the topics discussed a little bit more. One of the standout stories is called The Infusorium, and Infusoria, for those uninitiated, as I was when I read this story, it's apparently a type of culture or bacteria that is used in aquariums to feed spawning fish when they're very, very young, when they're freshly hatched. And that might not be the most accurate description, but it's as accurate as I'm going to get from my vantage point here right now. But the story deals, in fact, with this town that's dominated by this paper mill and the brown fog that blankets everything in sight. And they come to know this symptom with the fog as paper mill days for some reason. And it turns the humans who inhale too much of this fog into gibbering maniacs, almost lifeless husks. And their skeletons, when they die, their skeletons like stretch and mutate and just collapse in a very odd way based on the descriptions by Padgett. So yeah, check out The Secret of Ventriloquism by John Padgett on Amazon. I highly recommend it. And that's all for this week, but in next week's show, you'll hear from legendary artist Ben Garrison at Gurr Graphics, who recently, well, over the last few years, has had a major uphill battle with 4chan and 8chan trolls who appropriated his art for very bad things, very sordid and genuinely racist purposes. They basically photoshopped old caricatures of Jewish people and black people, illustrated by A. Wyatt Mann, an alias of Nick Bugis, who oddly enough has a Jewish girlfriend. And so, yeah, some of this Nick Bugis guy's art of depicting Jews in ghastly manners, like old school Hitler Youth propaganda, they found their way into Ben Garrison's paintings, and they were altered without his permission. And so he's been on kind of a crusade against 4chan, but we'll get into that on the next show. I think you'll find that interesting. And also, I'll be speaking soon to a pagan conservative, and I cannot wait to hear that young lady's rationale, because that's not something you hear a lot of. Christian conservatives, pagan liberals, but pagan conservatives, that's new. That's going to be an incredibly fresh perspective that she brings, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. Well, and that's it for this week. And remember, if I have interacted with you at any point online, I probably have pictures of you saved permanently to my desktop. So mull that over until next time. Goodbye.